I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we jump in, we must warn you this episode contains explicit content, such as sexual abuse, that may be disturbing to some people. Listener discretion is advised.
Also, if this is the first time you're listening to Sacred Scandal, everything will make a lot more sense if you start with episode 1. It's June 4th, 2019, and California Attorney General Javier Becerra is beaming behind his high podium in a tailored gray suit. He called a press conference to announce a major sting. The high-level arrest of megachurch leader Nason Joaquin Garcia and two of his three co-defendants.
These four defendants are presumed innocent unless and until proven guilty. But make no mistake, we are going to act vigorously to prosecute these individuals and bring this case to a close.
To his right stands an American flag and a huge poster showing the mugshots of Nason and his two groomers, Alondra Ocampo and Susana Medina Oaxaca. The picture at the very bottom, a sunny, smiling archival photo of still at large Azalea Rangel, makes for a stark contrast.
As you can see, this has become a case that goes far beyond one individual, one clergy member, one victim. If you are a survivor of abuse in this particular case, or you have information about the misconduct of anyone involved in this case, we want to hear from you. We want you to report any incident that you're aware of. You deserve justice, and we want to help you pursue it. We are asking you to please come forward and share what you know.
The temporary lifting of the statute of limitations for sexual abuse in California opened a window for anyone to bring forth anonymous complaints to the AG's office, no matter when the crimes were committed. But that doesn't mean a thing if actual survivors aren't willing to speak up before a jury. So the Attorney General's office made it easier for victims to get in touch. A.G. Becerra points to another poster, this one displaying in bright colors a website and a telephone number for survivors to call with information.
We hope to prosecute this to the end, but we were able to succeed in finding victims who came forward because we guaranteed them confidentiality. And we hope now we'll be able to confidently assure them success in this prosecution.
The hotline worked. The five brave women whom we met last episode, the Jane Does, came forward and agreed to help A.G. Becerra prosecute Nason. With the evidence and testimony they provided, the state of California was able to bring multiple criminal counts against Nason Joaquin Garcia and his accomplices, many of which would carry life sentences. For each count, there was abundant evidence of guilt. Between Nason, Susana, and Alondra's confiscated devices, there were over 100,000 digital images, plus text messages, emails, and phone calls, many of them depicting underage children, most of them belonging to his own flock. There were also things like discarded, soiled underwear provided by his victims, recorded conversations, diaries, letters, tokens, and the searing testimonies from the five main witnesses. A case with this much evidence and five credible witnesses ready to testify before a jury should have been a slam dunk for the prosecution. Even Nason's lawyer, Alan Jackson, who's well known for defending celebrity abusers like Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein, wasn't feeling too confident about his client's chances. In a letter to Judge Cohen, he mentions that his client could very well end up spending the rest of his life in prison. But instead of life in prison, Nason Joaquin Garcia got a plea deal. In exchange for taking it, he will spend a little over 16 years in prison and a lifetime of sex offender status. And that's it. Compared to the sentences other cult leaders who sexually abuse their followers have received, it's basically a slap on the wrist. So what went wrong? Was the evidence tampered with? Were the witnesses caught lying? No, it was something much more stupid. In this episode, we discuss how prosecutorial misconduct allowed the church to spin the plea deal as a win, and what chances of justice are left for the victims of La Luz del Mundo. I'm Roberta Garza, and this is Sacred Scandal, Season 2. Episode 11, A Deal with the Devil. One of the first things the church did after Nason was arrested was mount a PR campaign in his defense. It went something like this. Nason is innocent, the women accusing him are greedy liars controlled by the devil, and the congregation should stop watching the news or using the internet, because nothing they see there can be trusted. In fact, it's best for church members to get their information directly from LLDM ministers or trusted leaders.
When he was first arrested, I didn't believe, you know, he had committed the crimes that he was being charged with.
That's Nelly Aguilar, a longtime prosecutor turned criminal defense lawyer living in Fresno, California, and a former member of La Luz del Mundo. At the time of Nason's arrest, she was still a member of the church and even did some legal work for them. That's how she met the apostle.
He was always very respectful with me. He was very kind. So I didn't believe when these charges were filed.
Nelly was so convinced of Nason's innocence that she volunteered to set up his bail. But little by little, Nelly noticed something was off.
Once I started hearing arguments from his lawyers, once I started hearing different aspects of the details, then I started thinking, oh, wait a minute, you know, no, there's something there.
As an attorney, Nelly knew how the law and criminal defense trials worked, and she noticed that what the church was saying didn't really add up.
Especially because I was still kind of going to church on Sundays and hearing what the leadership was telling the ministers to say about the case. So that wasn't jiving with me.
Early on in this case, Nason's defense filed an appeal to dismiss all charges on a technicality, and won.
So they made it sound like it was this big victory. So people were expecting him to get out.
But Nelly knew Nason was not going to get out of anything.
Because the prosecution was going to refile the case as soon as it was dismissed.
After a couple of the defense's other appeals were rejected as groundless, the church tried to spin the facts.
The leadership tells the members he's being set up. Everybody's being bought.
LLDM told their members that each and every level of the American judicial system had been bribed by enemies of the church, and that Nason was being set up. But Nelly knows that's just not how the California court system operates.
If you really look at the number of judges that saw this case, in the Superior Court in LA, there was at least six judges at various stages who saw this case and did not release him. There was multiple judges at the appellate level who saw the multiple appeals. And then there was the judges of the Supreme Court.
The church also told his followers that the video evidence in the trial was created by deep fakes. Elisa Flores remembers the church priming its members to disbelieve the video and photographic evidence by teaching its congregation how the Facetune app worked.
They brought down the projector screen and they showed us a video about how people use this deep face app to put people in videos or change their faces and make it look like they're talking and stuff like that. And I was like, well, that's weird. Why would they show us that? That's crazy.
Elisa and the rest of the believers had no idea what Nason was actually charged with. Nobody ever told them. But Nelly knew that if the videos were actually deep fakes, Nason's lawyers would bring that up to the judge and throw the prosecution's case.
Nason had like the best attorneys in the U.S. He had the best law firm and they had the best experts. They had a forensic expert from Florida that they flew to California to look at the evidence. Had they found an inkling of the videos or the photographs being doctored, being fake, being manipulated in any way, they would have not hesitated to file a motion excluding those, but they never did.
As time passed and news of the hearing spread, it became more difficult for LLDM to fully control what its congregation was seeing and hearing. So the church started telling its members that what Nason's defense lawyers acknowledged as fact before the court might not be what actually happened.
You cannot, as an officer of the court, as an attorney, you cannot tell a lie to the judge for strategy purposes.
For instance, Nason's lawyers may have argued that the apostles did have sex with these women, but that it was totally consensual. So the church told its congregation that even though that's what the lawyers said, it was a strategic lie, because the apostle of God would never have sexual relations with these awful women or with underage children, and that the videos were deep fakes planted there by some of the alleged victims out of pure evil.
The church is being told, well, you know, a strategy. It's okay, they're lying to get them out. That's not true. You can't do that as a lawyer. So all of those red flags started coming up for me.
A year after Nason was arrested, the church's annual Santa Cena celebration was much less grandiose than in previous years. Not just because it was the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, but also because their leader, Nason, was still behind bars. To everyone's surprise and awe, at the Grand Temple in Hermosa Provincia, the leaders played its congregation an audio message from their beloved apostle. I do not see the bars that separate me from you, he told his followers. I see your beautiful faces, because you are the children of God. And then the apostle told his believers to repeat after him, I promise you, Lord, that whatever the suffering, I will never abandon you. And they all burst out crying. This is how the man called Nason Joaquin Garcia went from alleged abuser to martyr. As the congregation carried on with its celebrations in Hermosa Provincia, the preliminary hearings reviewing Nason's criminal activities were underway in California.
During the same time that the church is having this very important celebration, all of the dirty laundry and the horrible things that were being done are coming out through testimony.
A preliminary hearing is where the prosecution presents all the evidence and testimony to convince the court there's enough substantial grounds to bring the case to trial. And Nelly followed those hearings closely.
So what was coming out is that Nason's iPhone and iPad had many videos and photographs, and it was very graphic and detailed about what they were doing.
In the videos and photographs Nelly is talking about, Nason is having sex with multiple people, including with his co-defendants. And not just plain missionary position sex.
They found a video of Nason and Susana Oaxaca having sex. They described that scene as, you know, being very salacious, where at the end, she's giving him oral copulation and then spitting his own semen back into his own mouth, which was, I'm like, oh my gosh.
In another video, Nason is having sex with one of his co-defendants and someone who looks like a minor.
Then there's videos of Azalea, you know, his other co-defendant, having sex with the boy that has a mask.
It wasn't enough that the videos had been found on his iPhone. Investigators also found records showing how many times the videos had been accessed, on what dates and for how long, proving they were not just planted there without Nason's knowledge.
They knew when he was looking at those pictures and videos. And even on June 3rd, right before his arrest, they said one of the videos he was looking at it, and they were very specific. They said 478 seconds, which would amount to like 7 minutes. Some of those videos were taken in his home in Guadalajara, right across the street from the church. Some of those videos were taken on February 14th of 2019, the day that, you know, you have this big celebration in the church. I mean, they had all of those details. They had the GPS locations of where the videos were taken. They had all of that.
So Nason's defense team couldn't argue that the apostle was unaware he had child pornography on his phone, that he was framed, or that it was a setup, as the church told the believers. The evidence was crystal clear.
One of the videos that was discussed and testified at court was of himself recording the scene, and he's recording it both with his iPad, which is set in one place, and then his iPad shows him coming onto the scene with his phone, recording it from a different angle. When the officers or the detective was asked, could you identify him in the video? Could you see his face? And the detective said, oh, absolutely, you could see him in the video.
Nelly could no longer ignore the truth.
Not everybody can access all that information. Me as a lawyer, I was able to because I know how to do that. But, you know, the common church member doesn't know how to do that. Once I started getting this information, I said, you know, I can't do this.
That's when she left the church.
I can't believe in somebody who is engaging in this kind of conduct, who is supposed to be taking care of the church, because we were taught that the apostles' job was to take care of the church, to keep her pure, not to abuse her.
From that point on, Nelly kept a close eye on the case.
There were some mistakes, in my opinion, that the prosecution made.
That's next, after the break.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nason Joaquin Garcia was arrested in 2019, but it took 4 years for his plea deal to be handed down. It's not exactly unusual for a criminal case to be delayed and delayed. Unlike civil cases, the onus is on the prosecutor to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the accused is guilty. And there's a lot of regulations governing how a trial can proceed.
In our legal system, there are rules. And effectively, those rules are created to make it a fair fight.
That's Joey Judician, the lawyer who represents the Jane Does in their ongoing civil case against Nason and LLDM. We met her in the last episode when she counseled the five women during the criminal case.
The law doesn't always get it right. And in this case, there was so much that was working against these victims. In my opinion, and as time has passed, I have become a lot more enraged and a lot more incensed.
The rules Joey mentioned before, the ones created to make sure a fair trial occurs, that everyone is innocent until proven guilty and each party has a fighting chance, also create a lot of opportunities to delay proceedings, to file motions and appeals when those rules are not being followed. It's a strategy Nelly Aguilar recognized early on.
Because the longer you prolong a case like this, witnesses, like victims, will get tired, they'll move away, they'll maybe pass away or whatever, you know, so to diminish the possibility of going to trial. That's one of them. Another strategy in this case was a lot of appeals were being filed. So that also prolonged everything.
Remember that first appeal, the one Nelly said the church presented as a big victory? That was based on a pretty minor technicality. When someone is charged with a crime, they have a right to a preliminary hearing within 10 court days. It's to make sure the case is viable and that a wrongfully accused person doesn't rot in jail while waiting to be formally charged.
Well, in Nason's particular case, he had, based on the time waivers that they had entered during the various hearings, his preliminary hearing needed to be heard by September 23rd of 2019. On that day, you know, his attorney showed up to court, said, "We haven't been provided with all discovery, we're not ready." Well, because of that technicality that he was supposed to have his preliminary hearing on the 23rd, but his case was continued till the 26th, that technicality caused that case to be dismissed.
When the DA's office refiled the charges at the end of July, they made sure all delays were waived and accounted for. But Nason's lawyers found another issue to appeal. A much more serious one this time. As Joey explains,
I am legally required to give all of the evidence within my control and the control of my clients over to the defense and the defense attorneys so that they could use that to be able to kind of bring forward their case. Same with them. And this is something that is very, very, very controlled because we need this to be a fair fight.
But it turns out the DA did not provide the defense with all their evidence.
And one of the things that the prosecution, the attorney general's office, failed to do was provide text messages between certain Jane Does and Nason.
The term for this is a Brady violation, and it's a big problem.
That creates a mistrial or an opportunity for a mistrial.
So even if the case went to trial and the prosecution won, Nason's lawyers could have appealed and contested the trial, and all would have been for nothing.
Even if they won the case, Nason's attorney would appropriately file an appeal and say, listen, they won because they didn't give us evidence when they were supposed to. And because they didn't, we didn't have a fair chance. And then that throws out the whole entire case.
On March 15, 2022, Nason's attorney filed a 211-page motion to dismiss the case based mainly, but not exclusively, on the Brady violation. The motion also alleged suppression of evidence, fabrication of evidence, unreliable witnesses, and witness coercion. In the end, Judge Stephen Marcus did not throw out the case. But he did order the DA to turn everything over ASAP. The evidence not being fully shared by the prosecution had been an issue since the court proceedings first started. We reached out to the district attorney's office for this series. They declined to grant us an interview and directed us towards their press statements instead. But those did not address, let alone explain, why there were so many missteps on their part when it came to handing over the evidence. At first, the DA alleged this was because of the pornographic and sensitive nature of the material. But this time, under pressure from the court, they had to admit it was at least partially because they had only employed a single agent to sort through the mountains of material. To top it off, that agent needed a translator to understand Spanish. Some of what the DA had access to, and Nason's team did not, were text messages from four of the Jane Doe's phones. Among the items the prosecutors failed to disclose were some of those tender love letters we have seen other victims write to their apostle and abuser. If you have followed this series since episode 1, you know victims of high-control groups need extensive coping and survival mechanisms to be able to live through their ordeals. And appeasement is one of the most common. But once in possession of those text messages, the defense argued that some of the relationships may very well have been consensual. And to the unsuspecting public, and surely to some untrained people in the courtroom, the argument would have stuck unless presented with better context.
Because if it's consensual rather than a rape, then the sentencing is less.
And since two of the Jane Does were adults when they were violated, the DA would have to work way harder to establish the absence of consent when there were loving text messages between the victims and the accused.
I don't think anyone listened to these victims. I don't think the time was taken to actually hear their stories and understand La Luz del Mundo.
The counts related to Jane Doe's 4 and 5, the most brutal ones, the ones that would carry a life sentence, were thrown out.
It's very easy to say these two women, these two girls consented, and not put in the time and effort to understand that perspective.
Nason could not wiggle out of the charges against him that related to underage victims, but he finally had the leverage he needed to avoid a trial, where even more damaging evidence would have become public. He risked losing everything. More so when Alondra Ocampo, securing her own plea deal, began cooperating with the DA.
First of all, he's looking at life in prison. He has one of his co-defendants who's going to testify against him. Then there's the factor of what is the church membership going to see.
28 new stations were approved to cover the case from inside the courtroom. The judge had ruled against the showing of child pornography in court, but he had approved the explicit videos of Nason and Susana Oaxaca, like the one Nelly described earlier, to be shown to the jury.
Nason knew that that was going to be shown in news coverage, and his followers were going to see that, and the church members were going to see that,
Nason didn't want a trial for the same reasons the Jane Does desperately did. They wanted the videos, the evidence gathered, the testimonies, to be seen.
They want to shut down the church. They want to make sure that as much focus and attention comes to this, because this church, this cult, was able to thrive in secrecy.
The trial was supposed to start on Monday the 13th, but on Friday the 3rd, the Jane Does got a call.
This something that should have taken 3 months, 6 months max, was now taking a year and a half, and they have been waiting and dying for their day in court. And then that Friday, they get a call and they're told that a plea deal was reached after being told consistently and continuously for the last year and a half that that would never happen.
Nason accepted the plea deal. He would be sentenced Wednesday the 8th. And there would be no trial. It was all over. Even though AG Javier Becerra had promised the Jane Does no plea deal would take place, the new AG, Rob Bonta, hadn't made any promises. It is likely he wasn't willing to lose such an important case so early in his tenure. The Jane Does were devastated. And they made sure to let the Attorney General's office know how they felt on Nason's sentencing day.
The jury box was filled with people from the news media. And so it actually did kind of look like a trial. Defense table was filled. The attorneys for Nason were at the table. The Attorney General's office and the prosecutors were at their table. The judge was there. It looked like a trial, and it looked like these girls were actually testifying.
You made our parents train us from birth to love you above all things. You will then continue to abuse young girls again because the fanatics will bring you their own children. I was a child, and he defiled my body and my innocence. I had to serve his food. I had to scrub his toilet. I had to dress him in the morning and massage his feet at night. I was commanded to wake him up every morning with a sex act. You actually pray and harm the people that love you the most. You made me this property. Those were his words. And I was his property. And that he could do whatever he pleased with me.
It was gut-wrenching. They were sobbing the entire time. The people in the audience were sobbing, the family members. Some of the media were crying as well and getting emotional. And you could tell that they were so profoundly affected by what the girls were saying.
They tried to make their case as hard as they could to keep their abuser locked up as many years as possible.
Please, Your Honor, be the first authority in your life that will stand against this predator. Give him the 4 extra years his sentence allows. Give him the gift of 4 more years to reflect on his actions. Give us 4 more years of peace. Give La Luz del Mundo children 4 more years of safety.
Judge Cohen praised the Jane Does on their bravery and condemned the families that had abandoned them. But he still didn't budge.
The lives are ruined in the guise of serving a supreme being. As of the Jane Does, at this point, I apologize, my hands are tied. Lawyers do what lawyers do, and at this point my hands are tied.
On June the 3rd, when the plea deal was being drawn up behind the Jane Does' backs, the judge asked Nason if he was willing to give up his right to a fair trial before a jury of peers. He asked if Nason understood He would need to surrender a DNA sample and register as a sex offender with every police station wherever he resided, for the rest of his life. He asked Nason if he was pleading under duress, or because he was being promised anything, or if he was doing it voluntarily, out of his own free will. He asked him if he was willing to waive his right to any future appeal. To all those questions, Nason Joaquin Garcia answered with a curt, yes. In the end, the Apostle of God accepted his guilt on 2 counts of forcible oral copulation involving minors and 1 count of a lewd act upon a child. Despite the documented evidence and witness statements, in the end, the 26 counts had been reduced to just 3.
Settlement must be 1/3 the midterm. The midterm is 2 years. 1/3 thereof is 8 months. Defendant is not ordered to appear, as he has waived his right. We are done.
16 years and 8 months in total, 2 of which had already been served. A guilty sentence, yet no trial. It was a loss the church would immediately spin into a win. More on that when we return.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Even with Nason behind bars, the church continues to preach his innocence. The absence of a trial was explained as the victims lacking any real evidence, and the lenient sentence meant Nason was pure. He had taken the plea deal only because he was framed and could not get a fair trial. The church said he pled guilty as a sacrifice in order to, and I quote, spare the church and his family more suffering.
It was the very night he took the plea deal. One of the leaders of the church sat in the church and told everyone that this was a lie and Nason was a martyr and he was being, you know, sacrificed and he was forced to go and contend against evil and totally switch the narrative to make him seem like this innocent, you know, victim.
Joey has worked her share of abuse cases like La Luz del Mundo's, often pro bono, and is not exactly surprised that the law doesn't always bend towards justice.
I have seen it time and time again. A white American client gets more money for the same abuse than a Hispanic or a Black client or any other kind of minority. And so these were all Latino women, and I think that it was very easy to brush it under the rug.
She compares Nason's lenient sentence to that of Nexium's Keith Raniere.
There is no way for me to reconcile the Nexium leader getting 120 years. And this is not to take away a single thing from the victims of Nexium, because my heart truly, truly goes out to them. But objectively, I mean, there was kidnapping here. There was forced bestiality. There was forced sodomy. There was brutal, brutal, brutal rape. And how do you reconcile him getting barely 16 years?
But even though the Apostle of God did not get what he deserved, and the criminal case didn't go as she and the victims had hoped, Joey thinks the civil case she's currently leading will give some tiny bit of relief to the Jane Does.
What these girls want, and what they have said universally to everyone, is that they want to make sure that this doesn't happen to anyone ever again. That's all they want.
And they know the best way to do that is for them to not just be heard, but believed.
What all cults do is create a system of just things that allows the abuse to perpetuate. Once you have every person in the world telling you, you're so lucky, you're so blessed, oh my goodness, this is the best thing that could ever happen to you, this is your purpose in life, then you'll do anything.
That's the way cults operate, actually. And it makes it incomprehensible to the rest of the world. Why did they bring the charges 20 years later? Because they have to get rid of all the invisible constructions around their heads and gain the strength that takes decades sometimes to do that.
You're believing in something that isn't there. It's this intangible thing in the sky. And so you're almost required to suspend logic and check logic at the door because you're believing something that you don't see. And because you're buying into that, there's this cognitive dissonance where you're able to buy into anything.
It's exactly what you just described. Make people understand why this happens the way it does and why these people subject themselves to these abuses willingly, but it's not willingly.
And I always say, you guys didn't have a chance. You guys didn't stand a chance. They didn't. The cult and all of the elements of a cult creates a situation where it is able to really, really, really do whatever it is that they want to do. They exert the control. It's also formulaic. It works on basic human psychology. And I think that most people would really, really, really fall prey in the same way.
It's hard to believe how easy rational, let's say normal people, can fall prey to a cult. But every day, high-control groups ensnare and bend their victims to their will, obliterating all their logic and reason, sometimes for years to come. And it doesn't matter how smart or how educated you are, it can happen to any of us, or to those closest to us. I know this because I grew up in a high-control group and saw how it affected myself and my family. If you're in a cult or witnessing a friend or family member succumb to a cult's powers, it can be hard to know what to do, how to help someone who's going through it, or how to get out yourself. But it's not impossible.
When you get out of a cult, it's like going through a divorce. Because you go through all of the same emotions. You go through the disbelief, you go through the anger, you go through, oh my God, it can't be true. And it's every single emotion that you go through when you're having a breakup, you go through when you're separating from a cult. It's your life, it's your identity. It's your whole, like your whole being.
That's next on the final episode of Sacred Scandal, Season 2. Sacred Scandal, La Luz del Mundo is a production of Exile Content Studio in partnership with iHeart's My Cultura podcast network and is hosted by me, Roberta Garza. Produced by Sabine Jansen with the help of Stella Emmett, Reynolds Gutierrez, and Ana Isabel Octavio. Written by myself and writer Alsop. Research by Roberta Garza with help from Reynolds Gutierrez. Additional reporting by Florencia González Guerra García. Engineering by Hugo Mendoza and Sabine Jansen. Sound design by Pachi Quiñones. Original music by Patrick Hart. Edited by writer Alsop and Maribel Quesada Smith. Executive producers are Rose Reed, Carmen Graterol, Isaac Lee, and Nando Villa. Daniel Bautista oversees audio at Exile Content Studio. Our executive producers at iHeart are Giselle Bances and Arlene Santana. Sacred Scandal was created by Melanie Bartley and Paula Barros. Special thanks to Monk Music Studios. For more podcasts, go to the iHeartRadio app or anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. 19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.